Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on behalf of the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is August 6, 2014, or it's 8/11/2018. We will start our second service today with a song entitled, To Yah Be the Glory. To Yah be the glory, great things He hath done. So loved He the world that He gave us His Son, to yield His life and atonement for sin, and open the life gate that all may go in. Praise the Yah, praise the Yah, let the earth hear His voice. Praise the Yah, praise the Yah, let the people rejoice. Oh, come to the Father through Yahshua the Son, and give Him the glory, great things He hath done. Oh, perfect redemption, the purchase of blood, to every believer, the promise of Yah, the vilest offender who truly believes, that moment from Yahshua the pardon receives. Praise the Yah, praise the Yah, let the earth hear His voice. Praise the Yah, praise the Yah, let the people rejoice. Oh, come to the Father, to Yahshua the Son, and give Him the glory, great things He hath done. Great things He has taught us, great things He hath done, and great our rejoicing through Yahshua the Son. The purer and higher and greater He'll be, a wonder of victory when Yahshua will see. Praise Yah, praise Yah, let the earth hear His voice. Praise Yah, praise Yah, let the people rejoice. Oh, come to the Father through Yahshua the King, and give Him the glory, great things He hath done.
Part 8 of the Everlasting Kingdom of the David. We're going to continue on now with Time of Greetings, Volume 2, and that's number 8. And the subtitle for our sermon is Revival and Reformation Precede the Great and Dreadful Day of the Yahweh. And so, with that in mind, we're going to read, start for a prayer thought. It's going to be entitled, matter of fact, it's just Luke chapter 17. Start with verse 1. It said, Then said he unto the disciples, It is impossible but that offenses will come, but woe unto him through whom they come. It were better for him that a millstone was hanged about his neck, and he cast into the sea, than that he should offend one of these little ones. Take heed unto yourselves, if thy brother trespass against thee, rebuke him, and if he repent, forgive him. And if he trespass against thee 7 times in a day, and 7 times in a day turn again unto thee, saying, I repent, thou shalt forgive him. And the apostle said unto the Yahshua, increase our faith. And the Yahshua said, if you had the faith as a grain of the mustard seed, you might say unto this sycamine tree, be thou plucked up by the root, and be thou planted in the sea, and it should obey you. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he is come from the field, go and sit down to meat, and will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself and serve me. Till I have eaten and drunken, and afterwards thou shalt eat and drink. Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all of those things which are commanded you, saying, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. And it came to pass as he went unto Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him 10 men that were lepers, which stood afar off, and they lifted up their voices, and said, Yeshua, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said unto them, go show yourselves unto the priest. And it came to pass that as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, and with a loud voice glorified Elohim, and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks, and he was a Samaritan. And Yeshua answered and said, were there not 10 cleansed, but where are the 9? There are not found that return to give glory unto Elohim, save this stranger. And he said unto him, arise, go thy way, thy faith has made thee whole. And when he was demanded of the Pharisees, when the kingdom of the Elohim should come, he answered them and said, the kingdom of the Yahweh cometh not with the observation. Neither shall they say, lo here or lo there. For behold, the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. And he said unto the disciples, for the days will come when ye shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you shall not see it. And they shall say unto you, see here, or see there, or go not after them, nor follow them. For as the lightning that lighteneth out of one part under heaven shineth unto the other part under heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day. But first must he suffer many things and be rejected of this generation. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But the same day that Lot went out of the Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from the heaven and destroyed them all. Even this shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day he which shall be upon the housetop, and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. Whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it. And whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. I tell you, in that night there shall be 2 men in the one bed. The one shall be taken, and the other shall be left. 2 women shall be grinding at the mill, or together. The one shall be taken, and the other left. 2 men shall be in the field, or the one shall be taken, and the other left. And the answer said unto him, where, Master? And he said unto them, wheresoever you the body is, thither will the eagles be gathered together. Let's go to Deuteronomy now, chapter 7. It says, when the Yahweh thy Elohim shall bring thee into the land, whether thou goest to possess it, and has cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, 7 nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Yahweh thy Elohim shall deliver them before thee, and thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them, thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. neither shalt thou make a marriage with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. But he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Yahweh be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. But thus shall ye deal with them. Ye shall destroy their altars and break down their images and cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire. This is what's going to take place all over the world. As soon as Yahweh puts Elijah David into the office of the kingdom, it would be when Yahshua shows up on the scene in the person, I'm going to say, because this is going to be such a transition of Yahweh's kingdom of heaven here on earth when it becomes visible, that the whole world is going to be in great surprise and consternation. And they haven't seen anything yet like the time of trouble that they're going to see when Yahshua appears in the person with his kingdom with 144,000, and then that is to go forth then conquering and to conquer with his house of David, the kingdom which is the kingdom of heaven. He's going to use that as his battle action. He's going to go forward conquering and conquer. And they're going to be casting down all these idols and all of these images and Babylon. In other words, read Jeremiah 51. It tells you exactly what's going to happen. The whole world has joined Babylon, and Babylon is going to be destroyed and thrown down. So that includes all the idols and everything in the world. But thou art an holy people under Yahweh, thy Elohim. Thy Elohim has chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Yahweh did not set his love upon you nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. But because Yahweh loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, that the Yahweh brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Yahweh, the Elohim, he is the Elohim, the faithful Elohim, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments unto a thousand generations, and repayeth them that hate him and to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack unto him that hateth him. He will repay him unto his face. Thou shalt therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I commanded thee this day to do them. Wherefore it shall come to pass, if ye hearken unto these judgments and keep and do them, that the Yahweh the Elohim shall keep unto thee the covenant and the mercy which he sware unto thy fathers. And he will love thee and bless thee and multiply thee. He will also bless the fruit of thy womb and the fruit of thy land, thy corn and thy wine and thy oil, the increase of thy kine and the flocks of thy sheep, in the land which he sware unto thy fathers to give thee. Thou shalt be blessed above all people. There shall not be male nor female bearing among you, nor among your cattle. And the Yahweh will take away from thee all sickness, and will put none of the evil diseases of the Egypt of which thou knowest upon thee, but will lay them upon all them that hate thee. And thou shalt consume all the people which the Yahweh the Elohim shall deliver thee. Thine eyes shall have no pity upon them, neither shalt thou serve their gods, for that will be a snare unto thee. If thou shalt say in thine heart, these nations are more than I, how can I depossess them? Thou shalt not be afraid of them, but shalt well remember what the Yahweh the Elohim did unto Pharaoh and unto all Egypt, For the great temptation which thine eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders and the mighty hand that, and the stretched out arm whereby the Yahweh the Elohim brought thee out, so shall the Yahweh the Elohim do unto all the people of whom thou art afraid. Moreover, the Yahweh the Elohim will send the horn among them until they that are left and hide themselves from thee be destroyed. Thou shalt not be affrighted at them, for the Yahweh the Elohim is among you, a mighty Elohim and terrible. And the Yahweh the Elohim will put out those nations before thee by little and little. Thou mayest not consume them at once, lest the beast of the field increase upon thee. But the Yahweh the Elohim shall deliver them unto thee, and shall destroy them with a mighty destruction until they be destroyed. And he shall deliver their kings into thine hand, and thou shalt destroy their name from under the heaven. There shall no man be able to stand before thee until thou have destroyed them. Now this is a prophecy for us today. The kingdom of heaven, this is the kingdom of David, is going to have this power. I see why David was called a man of war. Yahweh says, you can't build my house because you're a man of war. You got blood on your hands. You're a warrior. But your son that will proceed out of your bowels, he will build the house, me a house. And that's Solomon. Okay. So we have the same thing today. He's got the antitypical house that David is raising up here. And this is a commission that's given to this house of David. And I'll read to you again, and he shall deliver their kings into thine hand, and thou shalt destroy their name from under heaven. There shall no man be able to stand before thee until thou have destroyed them. For the graven images of their gods shall you burn with the fire. Thou shalt not desire the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it unto thee, lest thou be snared therein, for it is an abomination unto the Yahweh the Elohim. Neither shalt thou bring an abomination into thine house, lest thou be a cursed thing like it. But thou shalt utterly detest it, and thou shalt utterly abhor it, for it is a cursed thing. Okay, now do you see why he has to clean up the kingdom of heaven before he can commission it and empower the kingdom? It has to be sanctified. People have to be completely 100% born again before he can sanctify it. And so that brings into a prayer thought for this study. We're now going to introduce our main study. It says, Revival and Reformation precede the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. It says that the text of address by the V.T. Hardoff, September 27, 1947, and this is Time of Greetings, Volume 2, Number 8, for those of you that have the book. And the subject for this afternoon is found partly in Daniel 2, Matthew 4, Jeremiah 51. We mentioned that in our prayer thought, Micah 5, and Malachi 4. And that was also mentioned here as far as in our last study about the great day of the Yahweh. But mainly in Joel chapter 2 and 3. We shall first turn unto Malachi chapter 4, verse 5 and 6. Says, behold, I will send you the Elijah. I put the article in there. The Elijah or Eliyahu. Somebody with Yahweh's two names, Eliah and Yahu, the prophet. Behold, I will send unto you the Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Here we have the promise that the Elohim is to send someone before the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, and when he comes, whether he accomplishes anything else, he is to turn the hearts of the fathers unto their children, and the hearts of the children unto their fathers. Now it appears somewhat puzzling that the hearts either of the fathers or of the children need to be turned toward the other. But if we consider that the work of Elijah is not of a domestic nature, the spiritual, then we shall see that the Elijah's message is to intensify in the heart of the parents as well as in the hearts of the children a burden for the salvation of the other. For the parents are very anxious to labor with the other people's children, but seldom with their own. Likewise, children are anxious to preach unto others, but not so anxious to preach unto their own parents. For the Elijah's message of the revival and reformation, however, will place the burden of the saving souls primarily where it belongs. His message will be seen to be of the real importance rather than a theory. And when it follows, fully realize that the great and dreadful day of Yahweh is at the door, they will be seen pleading first for those who are nearest unto their hearts. Let us now turn to Daniel's prophecy. Let us now turn to Daniel's prophecy in Daniel 2:44. It says, "And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people. But it shall break in peace and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." It is understood by most Bible students that this great image of the Daniel 2 represents the kingdoms from the Daniel's time down and to the end. Here you see the stone which is cut out without the hand, smites the image in the feet, and the stone fills the whole earth. In the days of these kings, our time, declares inspiration, Elohim will set up the kingdom that is represented by the stone, and it will smite the nations and thereby bring their end. What could that day be but great for the Elohim people and dreadful for the nation? Indeed, it is to be the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. So what is the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh? When his army, his kingdom, he uses his battle axe, when he starts smiting the nations and bringing them to their end, that's the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. We used to think of it in terms of whenever the time of trouble starts, that it's going to be the great and dreadful day against for the righteous, that they're going to have fear and they're going to have to run and hide and this and that. No, the righteous are going to be in charge. It's going to be the wicked that are going to be looking to find a hole to crawl in. Daniel 2:45. "Forasmuch as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hand, let it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great Elohim hath made known unto the king which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain and the interpretation is sure." Now, how do you think Nebuchadnezzar felt when Daniel interpreted his dream and he told him, "You are this head of gold that's on this image. You're this head of gold." Then he says, and then lo and behold, Daniel beheld and tell that image with that golden head on it that represents Nebuchadnezzar was struck on the feet by this stone hewn out of the mountain without hand, and it broke and destroyed that kingdom, which represented Babylon. That's the reason why Nebuchadnezzar made him a golden image, 90 foot tall. And he made all of gold. He said, no. He said, my kingdom's going to stand to the end. There's nothing going to destroy it. Well, the thing is, when it's in prophecy, no one can change it. I don't know what Nebuchadnezzar thought he was doing. But anyway, it says, Daniel's account of the day is very brief, but Jeremiah describes the day in a detail. Jeremiah 51:21-23. "And with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. With thee also will I break in pieces man and woman, and with thee will I break in pieces old and young, and with thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid, and I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock, and with thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen, and with thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. Now here inspiration of strength. The Elohim with his kingdom is to break the nation, that his people are to be his battle axe. Both Daniel and Jeremiah are definite that the kingdom is to bring the kingdoms of the world unto an end. Micah 5:7. And the remnant of the Jacob shall be in the midst of many people, as the dew from Yahweh, as the showers upon the grass, that tarrieth not for man, nor waiteth for the sons of man. For the remnant of Jacob, those who are left after the tares, are taken out, and once set up as a kingdom, is to be a showers of blessing unto those who seek salvation. And as a lion that teareth in pieces those who continue in their sin, the day shall be great unto the one people and dreadful unto another. Now we turn unto the chapters of the Joel of prophecy that meet their fulfillment in the latter days. Joel 2:1-3. Blow, it says, ye the trumpet in the Zion, and sound alarm my holy mountain. Who is to blow this trumpet in Zion? And a typical Elijah. Malachi 4:5. He's the one that blows this trumpet in Zion. And shine along my holy mountain. What is this holy mountain? The house of David, the mountain of the house of Yahweh. Isaiah 2 and Micah 4. The mountain of the house of Yahweh, the house of David, shall be established on top of all the mountains. Then it says, let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Yahweh cometh, for it is nigh at hand. A day of the darkness and of gloominess, a day of the clouds and of the thick darkness, as the morning spread up on the mountains, a great people and a strong, there hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even unto the years of many generations. A fire devoureth before them, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. Yea, and nothing shall escape them. They say, here you see that a message is to be proclaimed unto the church, unto Zion, declaring that the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh is at hand, that it is to be devastating behind his people and glorious ahead of them. So this army, led by typical David, leading this army with Yahshua, the invisible king, going before, it's like he did the children of Israel coming out of Egypt. Yahshua in the cloud. He was that rock in the cloud that came down. And the children of Israel had to wait for that cloud to move on before they could break camp and move on. So Yahshua led the way, and he's leading the way today. But he has a visible leader, antitypical Moses, or if you want to say antitypical David. He has a visible leader that follows that cloud. That cloud's going to come back again. It says so in Isaiah 4. Let us go on. It says that the Yahweh is thirsty to comb the field, that he is to gather every grain of wheat and then burn the tares. Okay. Joel 2:4-6. For the appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots on the tops of the mountains shall they leap. Like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth the stubble, as a strong people sit in the battle array before their face, the people shall be much pain, all faces shall gather blackness. We see that the power which attended ancient Israel while they were taking the promised land shall also attend the servants of Elohim at this gathering time. Joel 2:7-8. They shall run like the mighty men, they shall climb the wall like men of war, and they shall march every one on his way, and they shall not break their ranks, and neither shall one thrust another. They shall walk every one in his path, and when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. Now this is amazing, because when Israel goes to battle with their enemy, the enemy, if they're allowed to live in their land with them, they don't have to, but they did. And so now they have to go battle against them, but Israel loses soldiers, because they fall on the sword and it destroys them. But this army of Israel, that's led by Yahshua, man on a wild horse, and they're visible shepherd, Elijah David, that is there, full front, it says, they shall not be wounded. Whenever these fall upon the sword, nothing shall be able to hold down the people of Elohim. Everyone shall perfectly attend unto his business. They shall gather the fruits of the earth, and nothing shall hurt them. But the spirit of prophecy testifies, and it goes on talking about as the saints left the cities. And we'll just omit that because that don't fit here. Joel 2:9, and they shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the wall. They shall climb up upon the houses. They shall enter in at the windows like a thief. For the servants of the Elohim shall certainly gather all of their brethren out of all nations, Isaiah 66:20. Indeed so, for the legs of the gospel are the legs of the people who proclaim it. Of course, only with the perfect coordination and a bulletproof army can the gospel work be finished when the two-horned beast declares that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed, Revelation 13:15. Joel 2:10-11, for the earth shall quake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the sun, the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining, and the Yahweh shall utter his voice before his army. For his camp is very great, for he is strong that executes his word, for the day of the Yahweh is great, and very terrible, and who can abide it? Having announced how great and dreadful the day is to be, the Yahweh is making this plea, Joel 2:12-14. Therefore also now, saith Yahweh, turn ye even unto me with all your heart, with fasting, and with weeping, and with mourning, and rend your heart, and not your garments, and turn unto Yahweh your Elohim. For he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and great of the great kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. Who knoweth if he will return and repent, and leave a blessing behind him, even a meat offering, and a drink offering unto the Yahweh your Elohim. Elohim's plea is that we prepare to meet the day, that now as sincere Christians who realize that for such an hour as this message of mercy come unto us, for we penitently return unto him. Joel 2:15-16. Blow the trumpet in Zion, sanctify a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the people, sanctify the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children and those that suck the breath, let the bridegroom go forth of his chamber and the bride out of her closet. In these verses, as in the Joel 2:1, the command is given to blow the trumpet in Zion. This second trumpet, however, is not to announce the day of the Yahweh, but to sanctify both a fast and the people, to call a solemn assembly, from which not one is to be excluded from the assembly. Okay, now, it says Joel 2:17, let the priests, the ministers of Yahweh, weep between the porch and the altar, and let them say, spare thy people, O Yahweh, and give not thine heritage unto reproach, that the heathen should rule over them. Wherefore should they say among the people, where is your Elohim? Here we are plainly told that Yahweh's people are to face persecution and distress, and that unless they keep close unto the Yahweh, their very existence may be at stake. Elohim's name dishonored, and the heathen allowed to rule over them and to challenge their faith in Elohim, Joel 2:18-19. Then will Yahweh be jealous for his land and pity his people? Yea, the Yahweh will answer and say unto his people, behold, I will send you corn and wine and oil, and you shall be satisfied therewith, and I will no more make you a reproach among the heathen. Elohim finds refuge and freedom for them in their own land where nothing shall be lacking. Joel 2:21-23. Fear not, O land, be glad and rejoice, for the Yahweh will do great things. Be not afraid, ye beasts of the field, for the pastures of the wilderness do spring. For the tree beareth her fruit, the fig tree and the vine do yield their strength. Be glad then, ye children of Zion, and rejoice in Yahweh your Elohim, for he hath given you the former rain moderately, and he will cause to come down for you the rain, the former rain and the latter rain in the first month. It is plain enough to see that Elohim is speaking unto his people who are to receive both the former and the latter rain in the first month. And that's the house of David. They're the ones designated to take up their work in the 12th hour, and they come out of the 11th hour movement and the 11th hour, what they call the 11th hour Adventist Remnant Church at Gilead Center. That's what it was originally named in 1970, and I believe Brother Johnson named it because of inspiration, and I don't think that he had a right to change it after that, but he did. He changed it around, manipulated it. And but all they call it Mount Zion's 11th hour. But Verlus didn't get the vision. He didn't think that Mount Zion's 11th hour tract applied to him, but it did. And that's what he's supposed to name his movement, Mount Zion's 11th hour. V.T. Hollis named it for him, matter of fact. And so, as a matter of fact, Willis Johnson had anything to do with naming Gilead Center, 11th hour Adventist Assembly Church. He did that on his own, because V.T. Hollis had already named it 11th hour Adventist, Mount Zion's 11th hour. And when the Holy Spirit told me that to name mine, Mount Zion's the 12th hour. The same Mount Zion. It's just become purified and sanctified in the 12th hour. Okay. It is plain enough to see that Elohim is speaking unto his people, who are to receive both the former and the latter rain and the first mount. Joel 2:24. And the floor shall be full of wheat, and the fat shall overflow with the wine and oil. For the inspiration is not speaking of the spiritual things only, verily of the material things as well, for the rain and newly revealed truth shall therefore produce a great harvest of the souls as well as the abundance of the provision. Joel 2:25-32. And I will restore unto you the years that the locust hath eaten, the cankerworm and the caterpillar and the palmer worm, my great army which I sent among you, and you shall eat in the plenty and be satisfied and praise the name of the Yahweh your Elohim or Yahshua your Savior, that hath dealt wondrously with you, and my people shall never be ashamed, and you shall know that I am in the midst of the Israel, and that I am the Yahweh your Elohim, and none else, and my people shall never be ashamed. You can read that also to say that I am the Yahshua your Savior, and none else, because he's the one in the midst of his people, and my people shall never be ashamed. And it shall come to pass after that I will pour out my Spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions, and also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days shall I pour out my Spirit, and I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into the darkness, and the moon into the blood, before the great and terrible day of the Yahweh come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of Yahweh shall be delivered, for in the Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be delivered, as Yahweh has said, and in the remnant whom the Yahweh shall call. Here we see that those who call on the name of Yahweh, after the latter rainfall, shall find deliverance on the Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and also in the remnant whom the Yahweh shall call. For the very first word, 4, of the next chapter shows that the prophecy of the chapter 2 continues through chapter 3, Joel 3:1-2. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of the Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, and they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. For these verses explain how, or why, and how, and when the Elohim people are delivered in the Mount Zion and in Jerusalem. These things, you see, are to take place when he brings again the captivity of the Judah and Jerusalem. Then shall he bring all the nations into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and there plead for all his captive people whom the nations have scattered throughout the world. So what do you think is going on right now? He's gathering all nations right now against Jerusalem and Israel. That's good. I mean, this is the same thing as gathering down the valley of Jehoshaphat. This is the same thing. Joel 3:3. And they have cast lots for my people, and have given a boyfriend a harlot and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. Verse 3 reveals the vile practices of the world. Joel 3:4-7, yea, and what have you to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon, and all the coast of Palestine? Will you render me a recompense, and if you recompense me swiftly and speedily, will I return your recompense upon your own head? Because you have taken my silver and my gold, and have carried into your temples my goodly pleasant things, the children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have you sold unto the Grecians, that you might remove them afar from their border. Behold, I will raise them out of the place where you have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head. Tyre and Zidon and the coast of the Palestine, then, those are nations which have scattered Elohim's people, shall have their reward. What shall that recompense be? Here is the answer. Joel 3:8-10. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah, and they shall sell them unto the Sabaean, unto a people far off, for the Yahweh has spoken it. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare war, wake up the mighty man, that all the men of war draw near. Let them come up, beat your plowshares into the swords, and your pruning hooks into the spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Inasmuch as the nation will be preparing for war when these prophecies are being fulfilled, it is plain to see that the atomic weapons will not bring peace. And what's the main focus in the Middle East today is on Iran, that's developing these nuclear capabilities, supplying Hamas and the Gaza people, Palestinians, with weapons, nuclear weapons of war. That's not going to be the answer for any of those nations. Joel 3:11, assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about, thither cause our mighty ones to come down, O Yahweh. Here we are told that Elohim's mighty ones are to meet the armies of the heathen. And where will Elohim judge the people? The following verses give the answer. Joel 3:12-14. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about, put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. This is for the 144,000. Come and get you down, for the press is full, the fast overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Yahweh is near in the valley of decision. Yes, here is described the day of the decision. The multitudes will then have to decide either to serve Elohim and live, or to continue serving the devil and perish with him. Joel 3:15-16. For the sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Yahweh also shall roar out of Zion, and utter his voice from the Jerusalem. And the heavens and the earth shall shake, but the Yahweh will be the hope of his people, and the strength of the children of Israel. What a day the world is now approaching, and how blind to the fact is even the church herself. Joel 3:17-21. So shall you know that I am the Yahweh your Elohim, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. What's this holy mountain? The house of David. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her anymore. Okay. So we got rid of our last stranger. We're just down the two of us now. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with the milk, and all the rivers of Judah shall flow with the waters, and the fountain shall come forth of the house of the Yahweh, which is the house of David, and shall water the valleys of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness, for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land, but Judah shall dwell forever, and Jerusalem from generation to generation. For I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for the Yahweh dwelleth in Zion, or the Yahshua, the Son, dwelleth in Zion. Tell us right here. Our final cleansing is to be in our own land. So we have a final cleansing, though, when we get to the land of Israel. For the scriptures you see are correlated, for the one truth explains another. Verses and chapters, therefore, cannot be isolated from their context, if they are to be rightly understood, for a correct idea cannot be built upon any one verse when isolated from its contingency, and only when we take Elohim at his word can we, in the true study of the Scripture, then we need but the key word to unlock the mysteries of Elohim, and here we have it. For the revival and reformation, a change of the ideas and practices, therefore, is our greatest need. Without this, we are sure to be found among those who shall say unto the mountains and unto the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:16-17. Okay, now we're going to go to Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 37. And we're going to pick that up for the end of our sermon today. It says the end of your long and trying journey, April 19, 1947, by the V.T. Hollis. This says, our subject for this afternoon is found in the 51st chapter of Isaiah, beginning with the first verse. Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Yahweh. Look unto the rock whence you are hewn, and unto the hole of the pit whence you are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare you. Isaiah 51:1-2. In this chapter, Elohim is speaking unto the descendants of Abraham, unto a generation that is following after righteousness. Okay, so now, the generation, the last generation, Mount Zion, the 11th hour, they actually restored the sanctuary system, and they were following after righteousness. We never attained unto it during the 11th hour, but I was part of those that was there, and we were following after righteousness. Okay, we now need to find in the stream of the time the exact generation which inspiration here addresses. Is it the people of Moses' time, of Isaiah's time, of the apostles' time, of our time, or some other time? If the chapter is addressed unto us, then our need of studying it and our interest in it will be infinitely greater than it would be otherwise, for the information we are seeking is found in verse 17. Awake, awake, stand up, O Jerusalem, which has drunk at the hand of the Yahshua the cup of his fury. Thou hast drunk then of the dregs of the cup of the trembling, and run them out. Isaiah 51:17. For this verse reveals that the Elohim is speaking unto a people who have gone through all the trials, hardships, captivity, and persecution allotted them to go through. For their sin and disobedience, they have drunk of the dregs of the cup of the trembling, and even run them out. At long last, there is no more dregs left in the cup. Well, those dregs were cleaned up in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, for the whole Adventist world and for the whole Davidian world. This, of course, did not be said unto the people in the Moses' time, nor in the Isaiah's time, nor even in the Apostles' time. It could not be said unto any people at any time, but unto those who have come unto the time of their liberation from the want, fear, and insecurity which they have created through their sin and rebellion. Okay, now do you see why we had blackness gathered on our faces at the end of the 11th hour in Kermit? You see why blackness gathered on everybody's face? They were in consternation and trepidation, and they didn't know what was causing it. The only thing they could figure out that they had their number one nemesis that they have always singled out before, and they said, well, let's just blame it all on him. And they did. And they didn't know it was their own sins and their own rebellion that was causing all of their trouble. Let's continue. For their divine calling to awake, however, reveals that though the time of the deliverance has come, yet they are in a deep spiritual sleep, ignorant of these good tidings. Okay, so Elijah David brought good tidings to Gilead sinners, July 14, 2002, to the prophet. He brought good tidings to them, brought a message from heaven, told them everything they had to do, and if they would do that, they could get rid of the filthy garments and get the sin's blood out of the atonement that's right in front of them, and they would be in the purified everlasting kingdom of heaven right then and there. September 16, 2002, all of Gilead sinners could have entered into the purified kingdom of heaven had the had Volus obeyed that message of July the 14th, 2002, to get rid of his filthy garments, and I'll outline it and show him exactly how to get rid of them. Okay, so that's how the kingdom is missed, by rebellion and arrogance and just defiance. Thus saith my Yahweh, the Yahweh and thy Elohim that pleadeth the cause of his people. Behold, I have taken out of thine hand the cup of trembling, even the dregs of the cup of my fury. Thou shalt no more drink it again. Isaiah 51:22. Elohim, you see, positively addresses the people who have already taken all the punishments they are to take. And at long last, he is pleading their cause. This cannot be said at any time to any people heretofore. How do we know that the time is here and that the Yahweh is now speaking unto us? We know it from the fact that these long-concealed prophecies on the subject are now for the first time unfolded and brought unto the attention. We are now ready to study the chapter verse by verse, Isaiah 51:1-2. Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Yahshua, look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and unto the holy pit whence ye are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare ye. For I called him alone, and blessed him, and increased him. Elohim advised his people of the day to hearken unto him. They are those who are endeavoring to obtain righteousness, those who are seeking the Yahweh and who are anxious to have a revival and reformation among them. They are now urged to look unto the rock whence they are hewn and unto the hole of the pit whence they are digged. Remember the theme of our study today, the subtitle was about revival and reformation. Well, here we have it continued on here in this here. This tract that we're reading here, Time of Greeting, Volume 1, Number 37. It says, we are not to coincide or conclude that the Jews are the only descendants of Abraham. Those who are fortunate enough to have this revelation brought unto them are the people. There is no other safe conclusion. If the Elohim caused the prophecies to be written, sealed, and then unsealed at his will and at the time appointed, the Jews, therefore, are not the only descendants of the Abraham. To find who these seekers of the righteousness are, really are, there are several genealogical facts to consider. Number one, only the citizens of the kingdom of the Judah, the two tribe kingdom, Judah and Benjamin, receive the title Jews. Number two, those of the ten tribe kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, were scattered among the nations, and they completely lost their identity. And number three, the Christian church herself is an upshoot of the Jewish church, and actually he should have said the apostolic church of the disciples and nation. He says they're the upshoot of the Jewish church and nation, and the apostles and her followers up to about 35 A.D. were all Jews. Then it was that, again, a multitude of Jews lost their identity by the calling themselves Christian. That's how they lost their identity as Israelites, Hebrew Israelites, by allowing themselves to be called Christian. Okay, comparatively speaking, only a few Jews from the kingdom of Judah have preserved their national title Jew. What if they had not adopted that title of Christians to lose their identity? What if they'd have kept their title? Adventists would have had to call themselves Jews. Period. 1844 on. They couldn't call themselves Christians like they're doing today. They'd have had to call themselves descendants of the apostolic Jews. Or the descendants of the early apostolic Jews and the descendants of the ten tribes down unto the stream of time must have increased unto a great innumerable multitude, for Abraham's seed was to be as the sand of the sea for the multitude. It is therefore obvious that the few identified Jews of the day are not the only descendants of the Abraham, but that many of the Gentiles must be of the Abraham. Since this mixed-up situation exists, hardly anyone can really say for sure that he is not one of Abraham's children. I'd like to make a point right here. Now, the Adventists are scattered all over the world. They've grown into at least over 200 nations of the world since they began 1844. And they've picked up the 144,000. But no one knows who they are directly. And so, therefore, that shows that the Adventists are assimilated among the nations, just like the 10 tribes were assimilated among the Assyrian nations in the north in their day. But the Adventists are assimilated among all the Assyrian nations today, here in the United States and all over the world. Antitype, type and antitype. Freethe Hollis said the Adventists represent the 10 tribes of Israel. And I believe that. All right, it says, perhaps many of the nations whom the world calls Gentiles are the children of Abraham. We do not know for sure who is who. Abraham, however, has kept a perfect genealogical record, where he says, I will make mention of Rahab and Babylon unto them that know me. Behold, Philistia and Tyre and Ethiopia, this man was born there. And of Zion, it shall be said, this and that man was born in her. And the highest himself shall establish her. The Yahweh shall count when he writeth up the people that this man was born there. See that, Psalms 87:46. So there you have it. Adventists went all over the world, gathering up people of the lost 10 tribes of Israel and brought them here in the United States and established their headquarters. But they neither knew it, nor the 10 tribes knows it. So it's a secret unto Yahweh. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. So click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Because he lives, I can face the future. I can face tomorrow. Yah sent his son, they called him Yahshua. He came to love, heal, and forgive. He lived and died to buy my pardon, an empty grave is there to prove my Savior lives. Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives, all fear is gone. Because I know he holds a future, and life is worth the living just because he lives. How sweet to hold a newborn baby and feel the pride and joy he gives. But greater still, the calm assurance this child can face a certain day, because he lives. Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives, all fear is gone. Because I know he holds a future, and life is worth the living just because he lives. And then one day I'll cross the river. I'll fight the last battle for the pain. And then as death gives way to victory, I'll see the lights of glory, and I'll
know he lives, because he lives, I can face tomorrow, because he lives, all fear is gone, because I know he holds a future. And life is worth the living just because he lives.